The following Dharma talk was done by Lawrence Doan Greco at Open Sky Zen in New York City. For more information about Open Sky, please visit www.openskyzen.com.
Today I want to talk about, this kind of relates to what a lot of you kind of broached on already, is how can we make use of our mental afflictions or difficult emotions in a way that becomes our practice rather than an obstacle to our practice. I know when I first started getting interested in meditation and Buddhism, I always kept putting it off, thinking, well, everything isn't okay right now. My life is too hectic. You know, I'm too much of a mess emotionally to sit. I can't stop thinking when I sit, so I'm probably not doing it right. So I had all these reasons why the time to practice was later, and that all these things going on in my life were obstacles to my spiritual practice. And I think we often do that. And it's funny, on the way here, I took a cab here, and the cab driver said, he was very friendly, "What are you doing today? Where are you going?" I said, "Well, I'm a Buddhist monk, and I'm going to teach a meditation class and do a talk." And all of a sudden, he was really interested, as most people tend to be, and he had lots of questions about meditation and how can I do it, and I'm driving a cab all day, and what do I do, and I never have time. And interestingly, I felt like he was kind of bugging me. I felt like I wasn't feeling that great. I was feeling really worn out. I was trying to look at my notes, you know, decide what to talk about with you all. And I felt like he was kind of an obstacle to my doing that. Now, fortunately, I realized very quickly, in a few seconds, oh, wait a minute. Here's someone I can teach right now. Here's someone who wants some help, right? Here in a small cab, we have at least a 10-minute ride ahead of us. And I was looking at him as some obstacle when this is a vow I've taken to do this kind of stuff. So it's funny to have caught myself doing that after all these years. So we tend to get stuck on our negative thoughts and emotions, thinking that they are a hindrance to peace of mind. Right? Say, I'll have peace of mind when I no longer feel so angry at people, when I no longer feel anxious, when I don't feel jealous of what other people have, when I have a better job, when I have a relationship. Then I'm going to really get it together, and I'm going to meditate every day, and I'll be really at peace. I'm going to be really blissed out and cool and great and have a little smile on my face all the time. And I'll be nicer to everybody, but I can't do it now because life is too difficult. I still find myself trapped in that little illusion loop. Then the problem is the more stuck we get on what we perceive as the problem or the obstacle or the object of our frustration, the more inflamed that becomes. And then the more we reinforce that negative emotion or thought loop. So then what are we supposed to do? I mean, there's never a perfect time in life. I'm sure you've all realized that by now, or maybe you're realizing it. There's never a point in life where all the ducks seem lined up just so. The job is great, the relationship is great, right? Family's great, apartment's great, health is great. It never seems to line up that way. Can anyone say that everything in their life right now is just peachy? Right? I can't think of a time where, if I wanted to, I couldn't complain about something. We can always complain about something. So then, given that that's our situation, what are we supposed to do? I want to read a quote from a teaching called The Wheel of Sharp Weapons, written by Dharmarakshita. Very interesting. You should look it up. In jungles of poisonous plants strut the peacocks. Though medicine gardens of beauty lie near, the masses of peacocks do not find gardens pleasant, but thrive on the essence of poisonous plants. In similar fashion, the brave bodhisattvas remain in the jungle of worldly concern. No matter how joyful this world's pleasure gardens, these brave ones are never attracted to pleasures, but thrive in the jungle of suffering and pain. We spend our whole life in the march for enjoyment, yet tremble with fear at the mere thought of pain. Thus, since we are cowards, we are miserable still. But the brave bodhisattvas accept suffering gladly and gain from their courage a true lasting joy. I never even saw that until 2 days ago. I was considering what to talk about today. So, of course, I had to start researching the peacock. Everyone seen peacocks? It's a pretty amazing creature, isn't it? Really kind of wild. Like, I don't know. Has anyone ever seen one in person? I have. Does anyone remember when NBC, their slogan used to be "Proud as a Peacock"? Right? Do you remember that? The New York thing, I think. Like that matters. So I found out, interestingly, that peacocks do in fact thrive on a variety of insects and plants. Even if the plants are poisonous, they'll eat them. They don't care. If you put little pieces of styrofoam in front of a peacock, he'll eat it. Doesn't matter. He'll ingest anything he sees and make use of it. Styrofoam may not be good for a peacock, but my point is, what the most interesting I found out is that, allegedly, peacocks will eat snakes, even poisonous snakes. So not only will they eat a poisonous snake, but to entertain themselves first, they'll follow the snake around as it slithers around, unaware it's about to be eaten by a peacock. It just kind of watches it, bemused. Like, oh, how interesting. Look at that snake slithering around. And then she'll eat it. Isn't that something? And supposedly, I have to double fact check, so I don't want to spread misinformation, but at least the analogy is wonderful. Supposedly, it's the poison that makes their feathers all the more vibrant and colorful and beautiful. They make use of the poison they ingest. They're not afraid of it. In fact, they watch it with some interest, some amusement maybe. Then they ingest it, and they turn it into something beautiful. So what if we could find a way to do that with all of these poisonous mind states and situations we face constantly? So first, I guess it brings the question up, is that possible? Or can only peacocks do that? And two, how do we do it if in fact that is possible? So, you know, part of the meditation instruction I give is about how to rest your mind and acknowledge your thoughts and sensations without getting caught up in them or swayed by them, which is normally what we do. So the whole point of practice is to learn how can we sit through anything, how can we sit with anything, and not be jerked around constantly by whichever way the wind is blowing. So that when outer circumstances are displeasing to us, we feel sad. When outer circumstances seem positive to us, then we're happy. And this is how everyone operates, more or less. We're just waiting for something to go right or wrong, and then we respond, like a robot. And that's really no way to live, even though it's how most people live. So the whole point of the Buddhist teaching was to teach us that there's a way out of that, so that we don't ever become completely numb to whatever's happening, but we can make use of whatever's happening. So not by trying to constantly avoid pain and bring about more pleasure, but by looking at everything with neutrality, curiosity, openness, acceptance, maybe even reframing what it means to be happy as, you know, is this not an opportunity to learn about myself? Is this what's happening to me right now not an opportunity for me to learn about other people? Or is what's happening anything other than an opportunity for me to learn about this world we live in? So if that becomes our reference point for happiness, guess what? We can always be happy. Because there's always something going on that we can learn from. But we're taught, too, that happiness means always having things go in a way that's pleasing to us. Having things happen the way we want them to happen equals happiness. So that's going to be really tricky. Things, I've discovered, do not always go the way we want them to go. A good deal of the time. Or they go the way we want them to go, and it turns out, we don't like what we got. It wasn't all it was cracked up to be. Or things go the way we want them to go, and then we lose the thing. The relationship, the job, the status, the health, the perfect body. The new shirt. Everything is impermanent and changing. So it's resting in impermanence is what brings in happiness. And impermanence doesn't mean like, oh, isn't this awful that everything goes away? Impermanence simply means that this is a very fluid and dynamic situation we find ourselves in. And that's what's wonderful about being alive. And how do we make use of whatever we're confronted with? How do we make use of the good, the bad, and the ugly? The key is that we learn when we sit regularly is that fixating on a story, right? Fixating on someone that we can blame for how we feel, fixating on a circumstance that we can blame for our negative situation or mind state or emotion is not going to help. It's useless. Because there's nothing inherently good or bad about anyone or anything out there. We make everything here and here. So by sitting, we learn to rest with what is, to make use of what is, without injecting it with our commentary, constant commentary. Sort of like, did you ever watch the director's cut of a movie where the director gets to comment throughout the whole movie? Two parts of it. I can't do it personally, but people, real movie junkies will do it, or if you really love a movie, you want to hear the director or some of the actors talking through their scenes, but you still hear the scene going on. That's like what we do with our brains. So we experience life, but it's not enough to experience life. We have to have this little subtext in the commentary, the constant commentary. You know? It's like people who talk during movies. Just all the time. So interesting. Just walking down the street, notice, and do this on your even the second you leave here today, notice how you infuse everything with an opinion or an idea or a thought, right? Someone you see in the subway, and then you go to a coffee shop, you go, oh, I can't believe they're out of skim milk. The constant. We're not experiencing things as they are. We're observing what's happening and deciding if we like it or not. That's our natural state. It seems to be our natural state, but it's really not. So learning to just apply some bare attention, brave, bare, simple attention to whatever's going on, whether you have time to meditate or not, whether you're working, whether you're walking down the street, whether you're with a friend who's difficult or a friend whose company you enjoy, just being there with what's happening and not indulging the commentary, it's pretty revolutionary. And it's very sane, and it's very, I would say, there's something almost relaxing about it. And you can learn to relax into a moment. And when something is going on, when you are feeling stressed out, when you are really anxious, when you're really hurting, whatever's going on, what would it mean to notice that with your bare attention, with openness, but without the commentary, without the story, without the cause, without the reason, without the need to fix it, without the need to drink it away or smoke it away or shop it away or fuck it away. Just noticing. That's really all we have to do. It's really, it's the simplest thing in the world, but it feels like the hardest thing in the world. So there's always something in life, there's always a situation that really, like a little thorn in our side, you know? There's always that one part of life or more that feels like it's out of whack. And if only that were settled and sorted, everything else would feel even better. But what if we looked at the thorn as a form of medicine? What if the poisons in our life became an opportunity to make something wonderful, to cultivate a quality that maybe we didn't know we had, to strengthen one of our best qualities? We're dealing with our depression or anxiety. What if we use that as an opportunity to remember that many other people feel that way all the time, or everyone has felt that way, or someone else is feeling that way right now, and there's always someone feeling worse than you do right now. So by taking the big me out of it and universalizing our experience a little more, that's an opportunity to develop some compassion. There's always a way to make use of everything that happens to us no matter what. Otherwise, we're just wasting time. So we get this life to live. Some people think we get many lives to live. But like the peacock, we can watch the slithering poisonous snakes with some amusement, some objectivity, and then not be afraid to just ingest them and turn them into something beautiful. So again, we're not doing it by resisting our experience. We're not doing it by numbing ourselves out or trying to reach some blissful state. We can just embrace whatever comes our way with bravery, openness, but not fixating on it, letting it pass by. There's something about this process of observing. Even in pain management, they're doing this more and more, like people who suffer from chronic pain or people recovering from surgeries or people in the hospital. There's something about paying close attention and observing something very closely that has a way of almost helping it dissipate, it dismantles it. So sometimes when I'm feeling a physical pain, even when I'm sitting or not, the more closely I pay attention to it, it gets harder and harder to pinpoint. Like, did you ever have a weird pain like over here and like someone's rubbing it for you and they're like, is it here? And I'm like, well, not exactly. And it's here, but it's kind of here, but no, sometimes it's here. It's sort of like, well, where is it exactly? Because nothing's that substantial, especially our emotional pain. It feels very sharp and pointed and solid, but it's actually not. So if we can learn to rest with our emotions without fretting over them, without exaggerating them, without thinking that they're never going to go away, they ease up over time. Sometimes very quickly, but could take time. It's not a quick fix. It's not a miracle cure. It's not magic. It's just the simple act of noticing. I remember once, happened a few times where I had like really bad relationships or dating experiences, and or if I was rejected, and we've probably all been there where you feel so like caught up in the person and what happened or what didn't go down the way you wanted it to or the rejection you felt, and I always would reach a point where I would spend so much time and energy focusing on it, paying such close attention to it, that all of a sudden it would just sort of lift. Like I'd get bored of it. And then suddenly it would evaporate. When I just kind of rested in the feeling and stopped the commentary, it got tiresome. And then it's, oh, you know what? Okay, no more. So, you know, even the lotus flower, it's such a commonly used symbol in Buddhism, you know, it looks like it's just this beautiful flower floating on water. In fact, it's rooted in the mud. That's why it's such a wonderful symbol in Buddhism. So it thrives in the mud. It grows out of mud. So do we. So it's the poisons in life, it's the muck of life that brings about the most beauty, that transforms us, that helps us to be more compassionate. That's how we learn to be compassionate to ourselves and to other people. People who have the easiest lives, you know, sometimes we might envy them, or people with, you know, lots of money or lots of status or lots of fame. That doesn't always equal happiness. And they don't always get the opportunity to cultivate these qualities. I think everyone does eventually. No one ever has it all that easy.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. For more information about Open Sky Zen, please visit www.openskyzen.com.